Welcome back to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness and where we are going as a planetary race, and how many people at this time in our history are waking up to a higher sense of who they really are. And tonight's guest, Lee McCormick, is very much about being a teacher of higher consciousness, of alternate realities, about a wider scope of perception and understanding who we really are. He will be in New York this Saturday night premiering his movie Dreaming Heaven, which he directed and starred in and has led a group to Teotihuacan, Mexico. Lee, welcome to New Realities.
Thanks, Alan. It's good to be connected to you.
It is good to be connected. I mean, you have been doing major, major planetary work, waking people up to an understanding that there's more to reality than they've been conditioned to believe. I mean, how did you get the sense that there's more? I'm just asking, I'm just curious, Lee, what was the beginning of your awakening? How did you get the sense there was more to reality?
Well, honestly, it goes back, it actually goes back to when I was a kid. And I grew up on around a family farm, a family ranch in North Florida. And I spent a lot of time out in the woods and in the swamps and around on horseback and just kind of roaming around, you know, as a kid on a farm. And everything was so alive at that time. And I felt very connected, and life just seemed really interesting and full as a kid. You know, and then as we all do, we get into this so-called adult reality, and we start buying into and chasing the things that we're taught to believe in. And I've lived a pretty great life. I've done a lot of interesting things, and I also made a major mess out of myself, with drugs and alcohol, and I was in the music business and on the road playing music for several years. And, at the time that my life really kind of hit a wall, I was 41 years old, and I checked myself into a treatment center. And I had an experience when I was in that treatment center that really rattled me. And it made me aware that there was an entire other side to being human, to our human experience, to the reality that we inherit, and really like the rest of the story of being human, all of the trauma and the abuse and the drama and the brokenheartedness and just the mess that humanity has become on the backside of the official story. You know, it's kind of like all the things that we don't really talk about, all the family secrets and all the history and all that stuff that gets passed forward from generation to generation, but it's not really on the front burner. And so we just kind of pretend it's not there, or we ignore it until it takes such a toll on your life individually that you find some way to deal with it.
That was a
big wake-up call to me. And I started questioning everything at that point. And that led me to reading a lot of books. And I read Don Miguel Ruiz's Four Agreements. And that really resonated with me. So I signed up and went on a journey to Teotihuacan, which is the location that Dreaming Heaven is filmed in. You know, and that connection to Mexico brought me back to clearly what, you know, I think we would say was a past life, because I first time I went to the pyramids, I literally knew where I was. I knew the place. And, you know, it led to the last 15 years. I've lived a very deep, very amazing, intense relationship with Teotihuacan and the plazas and the pyramids and the presence that exists in that place.
Well, let's talk about that place. First of all, for people who don't know, these are huge pyramid structures outside of Mexico City I think they are the largest pyramids in Mexico, and I think no one really knows who built them. I mean, maybe, I mean, you probably know more of the history of the place, and tell us about the mystery of that place as well.
Yeah, well, you know, Alan, there's always an official archaeological story about these ancient places, and you know, it's just more or less just a story. Teotihuacan, according to the legends and according to the traditions that have been passed forward, the beginnings of the city are 2,000 years old. Anyway. The peoples that created the Pyramid of the Sun, which is the largest pyramid in the Americas, that's been discovered anyway. The Pyramid of the Sun is the same base diameter, actually, as the Great Pyramid in Giza. And they do not know who built the city originally. The legend is that a people called the Teotihuacanos created this city, that they came literally out of the earth, that they were beings that came into this level of reality from the interior of the earth, that they set this energetic in motion, they created the layout of the city, and they lived there for about 1,000 years, and then they completely disappeared, and there's no evidence as to where they went.
And then where did that legend come from, actually, about the Teotihuacanos? I mean, who created that legend?
Well, it's literally in the history books when you study Teotihuacan.
It doesn't mean anything that it's in the history books, as we know, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the local shamanic tradition, the ancient Mexican shamanic tradition that's been passed forward for thousands of years, that's the information that I was told by local curanderas, and that's what I've been over 15 years of living there and being in and out of there. So, you know, who knows?
I'm just curious. I mean, that's the legend, that's the official story, but what's your intuition and your psychic premonition about that place? What do you get on a psychic level?
Well,
I
can tell you this, that the geographical location of Teotihuacan it's as alive and conscious and present as you and I are in this conversation. Literally, when you connect to that presence within the geographic location of the temples and the plazas, there's what we call the silent knowledge, which is literally an awareness that comes through to us. And this happens with people who've never had a spiritual experience in their life. You know, I've guided a lot of journeys over the years with a lot of people, and there is just an energy and a presence that mirrors and resonates for us what we really are as human beings, and it's just profound. You know, it's like we have the experience of the greater aspects of reality and consciousness as human beings, that we are not tuned into in everyday life, because, you know, the narrow parameters of how reality has been qualified for us just don't accommodate the vast nature of the true reality that we're a part of.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So this vast nature is found that, in a way, all the sacred sites that are around the planet. And I think Teotihuacan obviously is built in a sacred way. What I find fascinating, and no one has explained, is why the mountain behind that, was it that Pyramid of the Sun? It's sort of a mirror to the pyramid itself. You know what I'm talking about down there?
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're talking about is actually the Pyramid of the Moon.
Oh, okay.
And the mountain behind the Pyramid of the Moon. You know, the axis, the layout of the Avenue of the Dead, which runs north to south, for, it ran for several miles, actually, but what's left of the Avenue of the Dead is a couple miles long. And the Avenue of the Dead runs north to south, and then the position of the Pyramid of the Sun and the position of the Pyramid of the Moon and the location of the Pyramid of Quetzalcoatl are all on exactly the same mathematical axis as Orion's belt, and the same mathematical axis as...
Well, sorry for that interruption. You were saying that the relationship of this Pyramid of the Sun and the Pyramid of the Moon had special angles. Can you say that again?
Yeah, it's laid out in the same mathematical axis as the position of the stars in Orion's belt, which is a mirror of the positioning of the pyramids at Giza in Egypt, you know, which is pretty interesting.
So is there a relationship between whoever built Teotihuacan and the ancient Egyptians?
Oh, gosh, you know, I can't answer that question. I don't know. You know, what I understand in a broader sense, like not necessarily a reasoning mind sense, but just that level of conscious understanding that it's deeper than the reasoning mind, is that there was a profound awareness and connection between all of the mystery schools that have existed, and, you know, through time. Whether the Egyptian mystery school was, as far as we know today, the original, it's the oldest mystery school. It's 10,000 years old. And the Toltec mystery school, the ancient mystery schools of the Maya, they all had very similar relationships to consciousness, as consciousness is embodied literally in light, and the power of human intent and focus, and the awareness that the physical world is a manifestation of intent and a manifestation of light and energy, and that we experience the physical world, and yet we're certainly not limited to our relationship to this physical world, but we exist before the physical comes into being, and we clearly exist after we have basically checked out of being embodied in the physical form.
But can you just that, go...
Those relationships exist throughout all of the mystery schools.
But can you talk about what a mystery... I mean, I think I know what it is because I've been a part of one, but... Okay, Lee, you were saying you were doing... we got interrupted, but you were just saying offline that you were doing a filming where...
Oh, we were in Teotihuacan a couple weeks ago, and I was being interviewed for the new What the Bleep film that's in production now. And
William, and who's doing that? Is that William?
It's William Arntz and Betsy Chassie. They're making a sequel to What the Bleep Do We Know.
Okay. Good for them. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and we were filming in this temple. And every time they would start filming, everything would go down. The voice recorder would go down, the camera would go off. And this happened three or four times. And finally, I just said, okay, look, stop, wait a minute. And so I just had to talk to the spirit people. And I said, look, you guys, you know, I explained to them. I said, we're doing a film, and what we're doing here is really bringing the awareness of all that exists here out into the open to share it. And everybody just kind of held a space for a minute, and then they brought everything back up again, and it all worked perfect and never had another hassle. So,
well, do you want to talk to some friends right now and make sure we can, ensure the connection there? And
yeah, well, maybe it's my people, maybe it's your people, who knows? Anyway.
But anyway, you know, I am fascinated with Teotihuacan, and we can get a little bit into the movie. But I also heard, because I did a workshop with the Castaneda people. You know Carlos Castaneda, of course. He was the...
Oh, yeah.
Have you read his books?
Oh, yeah. I read all of them numerous times.
Me too. And I did have a chance to meet Castaneda's Nahual woman, Carol Tiggs. Do you know who she is?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
She told the story about Don Juan bringing them to Teotihuacan and telling her what really happened there and why they called it the Day of the Dead. Her story is people used to stand in those doorways there, focusing and meditating at the top of the pyramid for like days and maybe weeks at a time, just standing there and staring and focusing. And then the shaman, after maybe a week or so, would walk down the main avenue and climb to the top of that pyramid, and he would say something like, "Now," and they'd all disappear, at least the ones that had enough focus and intent. The ones that didn't just dropped to the ground dead. So he says that's what she said, Don Juan said, and that's why they call it the Avenue of the Dead, because there were some of those people who didn't make the great journey into the unknown. What do you think of that? Does that sound
funny? You know, that could be their experience. I have had amazing experiences all over Teotihuacan. And
tell me,
you know,
some
I can tell you for...
Yeah.
Well, there are numerous places within the grounds in the city that there are doorways, but I call them interdimensional doorways. And again, you know, in the journeys that we take and the experiences I've had with lots of people, the opportunity to move beyond this frequency band of reality is wide open there. And a lot of people have complete shifts in consciousness. They move completely beyond the structure and the form that we call being human. And they literally experience the infinite. And they experience what exists on the other side of the form of this reality. And it happens on a regular basis. And, you know, once you have moved in and out of that experience enough times, it becomes, that frequency literally becomes an aspect of what we are. It already is an aspect of what we are. We just don't move in that way.
How do we get to that frequency?
How do you?
Yeah, I mean, can we live in that frequency, or is it just come and go? I mean, what is it?
You know, it comes and goes, I believe. If you want to deal with this world and be in this world, you know, in the world that we were born into, which I believe personally that I have a responsibility to be here, or I wouldn't be here. And the energetic and the frequency of the reality that we've all inherited that we call normal is so profoundly powerful and compelling to us, and we've been programmed to live and operate within the world as it is, that you can shift into a much higher frequency. You can live with a foot in both worlds, as we refer to it. You know, and you tend to kind of dumb down over time and get sucked back into the everyday world, which is a heavier energy, a lower frequency, if you want to refer to it in that way. And so you have to maintain a conscious awareness and relationship with the light and with yourself, so that you just don't allow yourself to lose that higher, more refined relationship to the light and to awareness. You know, it's a practice. Not unlike practicing meditation. It's a practice.
Well, can we live there, or is that world just the place we can visit?
I don't think you don't live there in a physical body, has been my experience. My experience of all of this is that literally what we really are as consciousness and light, whatever that actually really is, what we are in truth, I believe, exists on another plane, and we are dreaming our experience here in this world. Mm-hmm. It's more that we are here visiting this world, and we're not really of this world.
Wait, so
and,
we're dreaming this world, but is this a I guess it's a dream we're all having together then, right? Because I mean, you're in my dream, I'm in your dream, but we call that reality, right?
Well, sure. Yeah, and you know what? There comes a point, there came a point with me in my life where, you know, I don't really care about the details of it anymore. What I am engaged in and what I'm inspired by is the opportunity to live the full array of experiences and live them freely and lucidly and without attachment. So I can live in this world and have the beauty and the connection and the experience that comes with being human and acknowledge and live. Like, I've lived all kind of wonderful experiences, and I've lived a lot of nightmares, too. We all have. Well, it's the entire array of experience from one extreme to the other that really gives value to the whole thing. You know, it's not that I would choose to go live something that's a nightmare intentionally, but in retrospect, I realized that it takes all of it to make what being human is, I guess, just... and the point for me is not to avoid being here or not to shift consciously away from here and stay away from here. The point is to be of that higher, and I say higher, I don't really mean it as a judgment. The point is to live from that place of clarity and high frequency and focus and intent, live in this world with that awareness, so that you can move through this world and not be hooked by it, not right. Get trapped into the drama and the stories and all of that stuff that's so prevalent in our culture.
I guess that's where we are now in this time of transition is making ourselves aware, because we obviously have been hooked by the culture. I mean, it seems like I have. I mean, we've been sucked into the...
Oh, yeah.
Into the world, into the game that the world plays with us, you know. So it's like, you know, I feel very much like I am aware of that, but I'm still pulled in by that. So I don't know really personally how to free myself so much from that. I don't know. What do you suggest? I mean, how can we free ourselves into it?
Well, it required for me, I've been living in relationship to this awareness and living in relationship with Teotihuacan and with my process of waking up, which is what I call it, for 16 years now. And, you know, life just, it is what it is. We live what we live. We choose what we choose. And I really don't have any judgment of it anymore. Not that I necessarily agree with a lot of what I see going on. And I realize the insanity of the way humanity has chosen to live in this world and, you know, and the short-sightedness and the destructive nature of so much of what we're doing and the way we're demanding to live. And at the same time, to get invested in the judging and the projecting and in the reactions toward it, just kind of, it just drains me. It doesn't lead anywhere. So I just have to continuously remind myself when I'm going into a judgment, a rant, a big reaction, it's like, okay, well, there's just no point. You know, we all have to make our choices, and we all live the results of what we create as a relationship to the world, and then we all have the opportunity to shift our attention and to learn ways to shift out of this realm and to connect to the greater aspects of what we really are as human beings. And that's a practice. Again, I've said that before, but it literally is, if you have the opportunity to find a teacher, or a guide, or whatever you want to call it, that can help you find that true connection to the authenticity of what we are as human beings in the full sense. And once we've had that experience as adults, you don't forget it again. you know, right. And then it's a matter of practice and intent to maintain that relationship and to develop that relationship, just like you would develop a relationship with, you know, with a partner or a friend.
Right. So let's talk about the film, because this sort of leads us right into the film that you made, Dreaming Heaven, where you took, what was it, 18 people?
We had 18 people on that journey, and the journeys are typically 5 days long. We fly into Mexico City on day one. We spend 4 days, which literally becomes such a time warp that you feel like you've been there for a month. And we spend 4 days in the experience of the journey, and then on the fifth day or the sixth day, typically, everyone flies back home again. And we filmed 18 people over 5 days, and it was just a very regular cross-section of people. There's a civil rights attorney, there was a screenplay writer, there was a couple contractors from Santa Fe, you know, there was a realtor from New Mexico, just, you know, everyday kind of people, but all people who had some compelling draw to want to know more about life and reality, or they had been on a personal healing path, you know, dealing with their personal lives and their personal issues or stories or experiences. So there was a common thread of interest in themselves and in the quality of their life that drew them there. And the film is literally a total reality production. There was nothing scripted. There was nothing predetermined. We filmed the 5 days from beginning to end. We ended up with about 125 hours of film that the movie was edited out of. So it was a pretty big undertaking, editing the work that we had. And it took 3 years to put it together. And then we wrote the soundtrack that goes with the film, and we wrote a book that also is the journey book. It's a guidebook that accompanies the process of the film. So, because what happened is people watched the movie, and consistently the response that we got is they felt like they were on the journey. They could feel the energy of what was going on. It's being translated through the film, and that was really interesting to me. That the energy of Teotihuacan and the energy of what happens in that journey literally translates through the light of the film.
So people who come to see this film on Saturday night at 8:30 in New York City, if you go to the metacenter.com or metacenterny.com, you can buy a ticket. You can call 212-736-0999 for tickets for these films. So if they watch this film on Saturday, they're going to have a shamanic experience. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that that's been the response from every audience that I've sat with. Uh-huh. You know, it's funny. When you create something like a film, at least I'm always expecting to walk into a screening or a viewing of the film, you know, and for the first time, there's going to be an audience that when the film ends, they're all going to look at me and say, what the hell was that? but that hasn't happened yet. Every time, there's just a stillness at the end of the film, and people are really moved by it.
And so, in the film, there are people who actually go through a transformation of experience, huh?
Oh, and it's visible.
The film itself,
if you take a snapshot of the faces of the people on the journey on day one, it's a 4-day process, like I said. If you took a photograph of the individuals or a still from day one, and then you look at the same people on day four, they across the board look 20 years younger, or they look like their entire being has completely shifted. And then there's scenes in the film, some of the ceremonies are really powerful. And in a couple of the ceremonies, you see literally people shift completely into an entire other dimension. And you can see their physical body there, and it's real obvious that they have had a huge experience during the course of, like, of the ceremony.
How do they shift? What's responsible for the shifting?
Energy and consciousness. Literally what we are. You know, if I have to explain it to people, I'll use the example that if you live your life day to day at 99 on your radio dial, like, you know, your life is the frequency band of 99 FM. When you live in that particular frequency of reality, that particular belief system, that parameter of definition, and judgment and history and legacy, you literally lose any awareness that the entire other spectrum of realities that exist on the FM dial is even out there. Well, when you come into an experience like Dreaming Heaven, you literally shift consciously, and the frequency of your awareness shifts to, say, 104.5. So your body is present at the 99 frequency, and your consciousness has expanded to 104.5. So you're having an experience of a much broader range of consciousness and awareness than what we live day to day, because that broader range of consciousness and awareness is not an aspect of the day to day reality that our attention has been trained to focus on.
Right. So I get that, and I think that's really exciting, and that's sort of what I like doing this program, is kind of to shift people's idea of reality. That's what all the program New Realities. So you were leading this this tour with who else was part of this group of shamanic leaders?
Yeah, well, Dana Walden was a writer on the film. Dana and I wrote most of the soundtrack together. He produced the soundtrack. He was one of the cameramen. Kelly Sullivan Walden, who is Dana's wife. Kelly is the dream oracle. Kelly has a couple dream books out and a deck of dream interpretation cards. Kelly's an amazing lady. Kelly was literally on the journey, and she is one of the writers of the journey book. The journey book is literally told through Kelly's experience and story of that journey to Teotihuacan, which she was on. She's in the film. A man named Straw Wiseman, who was one of the principals in What the Bleep Do We Know, was one of the editors and one of the writers on the film. Jenny Gentry and Frank Hayhurst, Francis Rico, are the other two guides that I work with in guiding and leading the journey. And then there's, you know, then there are the just the folks that are on the journey.
Okay. So you take this group, they've signed up because they want to go through some kind of transformation, or there's some change they want in this lot in their lives. And you take them to this magical place of Teotihuacan. And did you have some of this designed ahead of time, what you were going to put these people through? Because you've done it before, obviously, or like, so I'm just thinking, if people are listening now and they want to do this journey with you, or can you give us a little taste of some of the transformational exercises? And of course, there's a bunch in the film you show, like hanging by your legs off the side of the pyramid. That's a pretty transformational experience. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Well, the layout of the city is literally laid out as in the ascending levels of consciousness and the ascending levels of density of our human form. And what I mean by that is there are a series of plazas through the main body of the Avenue of the Dead. And the first plaza is the plaza of Earth, which corresponds with our physical body. Our physical body is the densest aspect of our human form. The next plaza is the plaza of water, and water is the element of emotion in our emotional body. The next plaza is the plaza of air, and air is the element of the mind. And then the fourth plaza is the plaza of fire, and fire is the element of spirit. So literally in the layout of the city, it serves as a mirror for us as humans to come to terms with the various aspects that make up our humanity, and to really come face to face with what we're holding as a relationship to our body, to our emotions, to our mind, to our spirit, and everything that's contained energetically in the context of our holding ourselves together as human beings. And, you know, for instance, emotionally, we carry a lot of heavy energy in our emotional body through the experience of life. It's part of being human. And that's natural, this interaction, this emotional reaction to experience in life. What's actually not natural is the way that we have been taught to judge our experiences and to hold on to those judgments, and to carry that energy and that judgment with us through life. And then literally those judgments become what we call baggage. You know, people say, well, I've got to work on myself. I've got too much baggage. Well, it literally is a baggage. It's an energetic baggage. And so the unraveling of our life, of our beliefs, of our legacy, our history, our personal stories, the unraveling of all of that allows us the opportunity to literally release that energy and let it go, as opposed to traditional therapy, which you may be processing some childhood trauma for 20 years, which is actually ludicrous. There's no end to it. The shamanic, when you bring the shamanic aspect to doing personal work on yourself, you realize that the point is to go into the story and the energy of the story, the energy of the judgment, the energy of the emotion, and to call that up and then release it and stop feeding it and stop giving it attention. So the journey through Tao, really, it complements our Western-minded therapeutic practices in that it's like the missing link. It's the opportunity to actually let that stuff go and stop defining ourselves by it and stop looking at the world through all of these layers and filters of belief and judgment and story.
Right. So have people made a permanent shift in their lives, the people in this particular film, party, people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you see some of that in the end of the movie. You see people speaking to the experience. You know, I've probably been with 1,000 people over the last 15 years in Teotihuacan.
Wow.
And I have seen amazing, amazing things happen just time and time again. I mean, that's why I keep doing what I do.
Are you because are you going again soon?
Yeah, actually, we have a journey set for December 28th to January 2nd. We're going to go back to Mexico for New Year's. You know, it's a great time to go anyway. Mexico's awesome during the holiday time. But, you know, what a better way to meet the new year than on the Pyramid of the Sun.
So how do people find out about, what's your website? How can people find that?
Dreaming Heaven's website is dreamingheaven.net. And the information for the screening, the information for the journeys, you know, for whatever we have going on is on the website, dreamingheaven.net. I have another website called spiritrecovery.com. that I also publicize and promote all of our journeys and workshops through.
Well, I'm very happy you're going to be in New York and you're going to do a little music, you're going to lead a little meditation, answer questions about the film, of course, and, you know, sort of initiate people into a kind of another level of consciousness, right? I mean, that sort of the idea of the film, in a sense, just plants seeds of possibility. Of course, we're on this journey, but I think, you know, we want to activate people Would you say that's an intention there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the truth is life is continuously giving us opportunities to wake up, to make choices, to step forward. And this film is really an opportunity. I've never seen anything like it. We've all read a lot of self-help books. We've all sat and listened to a lot of teachers and a lot of gurus and stuff talk about enlightenment or transformation. But I've never seen a film that literally follows a group of people through a real, spontaneous living experience like Dreaming Heaven. It's really a unique piece of work, and it's really a unique experience to watch.
Wow, that sounds great. I mean, I saw part of the film, but I wanted to actually save it for the night where you would be there so I could see the whole film with everybody. So I didn't want to see all of it. So I'm looking forward to actually seeing the whole film and being there and having that experience. And you're going to be in New York this week as well. Do you want to say anything about your wife's upcoming shows that are also going to happen this week?
Well, you know, my wife is amazing. She has an amazing book out called My Kitchen Cure that's about a healing relationship with food and the choices that we make around how we eat. That's a very inclusive perspective on food, and she had Crohn's disease, and she healed it through diet and acupuncture, and she's just become a reference library herself of knowledge around food, whole food, real food, you know, and she's going to be there with me too.
Great. No, it's exciting. I'm glad you decided to come and that we put this film in. We just have to get people there. So if you're interested in anything you've heard here tonight, actually following you, I'm going to interview another woman who's having a film in the film festival called Talking Story. And this is also a journey she did around the world to look at different healing traditions. But I'm also premiering a film called Solar Revolution, which is the way cosmic rays are amplifying the DMT in our brain. This is scientific investigation by an Austrian biophysicist. That's opening up the film festival on Thursday night. And then Friday night, I'm showing a film called The Hidden Hand, which is about UFO, ET involvement on this planet, the reality of that. Actually, I helped co-produce that, so that's on Friday night. And then before your film, Dreaming Heaven, I'm going to show the Krishna Das story. You know Krishna Das, the kirtan singer? You know who he is?
Yeah, that's great. You know, I also, I'm going to have some download cards to give away, free downloads of the soundtrack to Dreaming Heaven.
Anyone coming to the film will get a free download of the whole soundtrack. Actually, the first 30 people coming will actually get a free bookend DVD as well.
Yeah. We're gonna give away some goodies, man. Let's have a party, you know.
Well, hey, thanks for taking the time tonight to be on the program. Sorry, we've got a little technical thing go on, but I look forward to seeing you. And I think that interview for Friday is set up with these young women that are very open and fascinated by this way of looking at the world.
Yeah. So, well, thanks a lot for the opportunity, Alan. I look forward to meeting you face to face.
Yeah. So why don't you call me when you come into town? Okay.
Yeah, I'll do it, man. We'll be in tomorrow evening, and I'll give you a call when we get in and get settled.
All right, great. I have another director coming in tomorrow, too, so I just want people to come out and see that these films. So go to newrealities.com and look for the film festival there. You can go to the Meta Center, ny.com, look for it there. Let's see, your website again is what?
DreamingHeaven.net.
Thanks, Lee. Looking forward to seeing you. Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Okay, now, since I'm sort of organizing this festival, I have another person who's going to be talking about her film called Talking Story, which is another journey film. It's a really beautiful film. I actually saw this at the Albuquerque. One of the films that are going to be shown this weekend at the New Realities Film Festival, which I have organized in New York City. It's going to be at the Meta Center. That is at 214 West 29th Street. If you're in the New York area, please come on down. That starts on Thursday, November 7th at 7 o'clock. And show a short called Ellipse, and then at 7:30 we're going to show this film called Solar Revolution, which is a very exciting film, which is how cosmic rays are influencing the mind. Oh wait, I think I have this other director online. So I was saying those films are being shown at the Meta Center this weekend, a whole weekend of I think some of the finest independent films along the spiritual lines, along the spiritual themes that I have found. And now I am talking to the director of Talking Story, who Fan Lei. Yes, and I really did love your movie when I saw it in Albuquerque. I thought that was one of the highlights of the Albuquerque Film Festival.
Oh, thank you so much, Alan. That's so sweet. It was great having you there.
That's why I wanted to bring it to New York and show people that, the value of your research and, of course, your personal transformation in that film. So, but you've been getting a lot of success with this movie. Can you talk about some of the awards and some of the recognition this film has gotten?
Oh, yeah. We've been really blessed and surprised by a lot of the awards. You know, my dream was really just to build awareness and share the film. And I didn't have a lot of expectation in terms of awards, but we did win Best Documentary at the Film Festival of Colorado. We won Best Cinematography at Breckenridge. And recently we won the Humanitarian Award at the Columbia Gorge International Film Festival. That award was particularly meaningful to me because it was an award that said that our film was doing a lot to help forward humanity, and so that meant a lot to me.
I think it is doing a lot. I mean, you interview, is it five different healers you go around the world? Is it five or six? How many people?
You know, we went to six different places and met a lot of healers in each place.
Yes.
And mainly, you know, my mission was to, I didn't originally mean to have the personal journey be shared, but instead I really just wanted to shed light on the idea that we were losing some of these precious traditions as our elders were passing on, and they didn't have the next generation to carry the traditions forward. So that was my initial mission.
But in the process, you go through a huge transformation, which I think is the best part of the film, really.
Oh, well, thank you. For a long time, I fought that. As I said, I wasn't intending to make a film about a personal journey, but I guess it turns out that people find that to be something that allows these esoteric practices and exotic places to be more accessible. So I reluctantly allowed my story to be put in the film, and I guess it turned out people like it.
I think it's very important you put your story in the film because it does make it much more personal. It makes the whole purpose of the journey more valuable and more, I don't know, I felt like somehow I was more connected to these other healers because you went through there as a witness, and then suddenly, boom, you're in the middle of it. Something emerges in you that has affected your life since. Do you want to talk about your legacy since making this film and dealing with these healers?
Yes, after meeting with each of these healers, again, I guess I would say I was putting my foot forward as a filmmaker, but everywhere I turned, I kind of got outed as a healer. And they all called me to you know, use the gifts that I've been given to be of service to others. And so since then, I then had a healing practice, which I don't know how that happened. Kind of overnight, word just spread, and all of a sudden I had a healing practice. And then I've also started a nonprofit organization called Healing Planet Project, the film being our pilot project, again, just to build awareness around this idea that our healing traditions and spiritual traditions need to be preserved, observed, transformed into something that we can use now. And I've also worked with people in corporations, film studios, different walks of life to help them to live their spiritual values in their work. And one of the things I found in my practice was that many people felt the split between their spiritual values and, you know, how they run their businesses or how they, what kind of work they do. And being able to show them that you can live in those values, apply those values, and be, you know, materially successful in this world has been really rewarding for me.
Well, it is. I mean, getting back to the film, though, a little bit, I mean, because it is so interesting. I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying how what it felt to me is access the Kuan Yin, the goddess of compassion energy. It seems like it sort of takes you over, and you sort of have plant seeds throughout the film of that Kuan Yin connection. Can you talk about that connection to Kuan Yin?
You know, I definitely throughout my connections with these healers and in my own training since then and up to that point, a lot of the energy that seems to work through me or informs me is the Divine Feminine. And one of the faces of the Divine Feminine, of course, is the Kuan Yin energy. And so in the movie, which, again, people will see it, hopefully, and it happens in one way. But since then, I asked that it be more of a seamless process between my personality and that energy. And so, you know, she pops in whenever... I myself need to practice more compassion and understanding, but also when other people come to me for advice or coaching or guidance, and that's what I tap into.
Well, don't you think, though, really, I mean, seriously, just between me and you and whoever's listening, that we are just aspects of these bigger archetypes. Our personalities really don't exist, and it's really the Kuan Yin energy, or whatever you want to call the divine force, that is really who we are, and the personality is a sort of fabrication that isn't real. Do you get that sense?
Well, I think it has its own place in its own reality because, you know, when we're in these bodies and we're dealing with the mundane things, and by mundane I don't disparage that, I just mean it's just part of the things that we deal with in the material realm. We develop these characteristics to cope and to survive, and so I think that, of course, they're not our real selves, but they're definitely a part of us, and I think being able to bridge those aspects with our divinity is our journey, you know, because sometimes I think people feel when they go on the spiritual journey, they kind of have to kind of deny that part of them, and until you're truly, truly done with it, those parts of you are still going to be there. So I feel it's important for us to acknowledge their existence and then how we work with them, you know, maybe like they're a child part of us, a younger part, and that younger, I mean more immature spiritually, but still a part of us we have to deal with.
Which part, the personality, you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. Because you know, we live here in this realm and on planet Earth, and we deal with other people that have personalities, and you know, and some masters that are walking amongst us now are better at not giving in to those characteristics than the rest of us. But the rest of us, we just have to admit they're there and work with it and work to mature them.
Right, and that's what we're here to do. We're here to, you know, evolve into that level of awakening, I think.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's important. One of the things I've learned and that I try to share is know where you are, you know, and aspire to where we want to be. But sometimes people get tripped up in thinking they should be this caricature of a spiritual being, and then that can lead us down another path, and a path of confusion or a path of denial of one's own shadow. And so I think that I always kind of talk, or my teachers were very firm with me about learning how to balance the dark and the light, the mature aspect and the immature aspect, and then just know where you are, so at least you have that starting point, you know, being honest, I think, helps with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you did a great job in the film, and you really, each of these teachers you go to are so authentic and sincere and really good people and wanting to help others. I mean, you chose some beautiful people to study and to...
Yeah, you know, I feel that was my... When I set out to make this film, I didn't necessarily want to find the most famous healers or the most known in their areas. I really just wanted to find people that just did this. This is what they do. This is their calling. And I think that was the one common thing. No matter what their path was, they always had a desire to help others. They were, you know, they had their human frailties as well, but their expression of divinity was compassion and caring and service to others. So very good example for me, for you know, who I'd like to be, that I'm not always able to get there, but I've been blessed with having these people to, as a reference point, you know, how to be real and human at the same time, striving to be of service and maybe be more than I thought I could be.
Well, in a way, they're very simple people. I mean, all the people you kind of profile, they're simple, in a way, ordinary. I mean, they have a simple life. They live simply, and I think a lot of us have very complicated lives in a way.
It's true. I think that a lot of times part of our challenge is kind of the overstimulation. I was just talking to somebody else about this, and we have so many different ways to communicate and stay in contact now, which are blessings. But on the other hand, I think takes a lot more practice to get into a place of quietude so we can hear the greater voice, you know. And these people that I met did live simple lives. And some of them did comment that it must be hard for us in modernity to maintain our connection to spirit because of all the distractions and the noise. So it was interesting that some of them had compassion for those of us who don't get to live in a mountaintop or, you know, or in a jungle.
I mean, it's hard, but it also seems like something else is happening. I mean, we have, because of the access to technology, we have more access to wisdom, ancient wisdom. And there's also a shift, it feels like, in the vibratory frequency of the field of the earth that is making reaching these spiritual levels a little easier. Do you find that too? Or is it
and I think too that one of the mission statements for my nonprofit is creating media as medicine. So all these forms of communication are a tool, and again, we can use them to fill our minds with, you know, junk, or we can utilize these energies and these tools to share stories, you know, that are inspirational, that help bring us up and to help each other to raise our consciousness. And I think that's where I feel very honored and blessed to have been able to capture these healers, their healing transmissions, and be able to use technology, which is, you know, media, to transmit, share those transmissions with others.
What were you saying? Sorry.
And that's just one of the things that is beautiful about when we use technology, you know, toward building things up.
But I like what you said, media as medicine. I should use that for my film fest. I love that. That's a really great way of putting it.
Yeah, it's been something that I focus on. Even when whether I'm doing a marketing piece or I'm doing a documentary or, you know, I'm writing something for myself or for others, I always think about that, this media that I'm creating, the power of it to reach others. What am I going to do with that? And how do I best use it to be of service? So I always have in my media as medicine, whether it brings joy to somebody, you know, laughter, a new idea. It doesn't have to be particularly, you know, spiritual woo-woo. In nature, and just bringing beauty to others through art and media, I think is it's a privilege to be able to do that. And so I try to do that with all forms of media that I create, and try to support others to do the same.
Is that what your new nonprofit's about? Can you tell me about that?
Say that again?
Your nonprofit, is that what it does?
Well, our mission was to is to sponsor projects that help to build awareness around healing traditions. We have a specific to maintain our nonprofit status. We have a specific mission to create media that is about the healing arts, and that's why the media as medicine is very important. So it could be radio, it could be recording, it could be film. And we've had some proposals coming through, and you know, trying to sponsor other projects that share that same mission.
Wait, so you sponsor other projects? You're saying?
Yeah, we'd like to. Right now, we've been really focused on this pilot project of this film, and I'm also currently writing a memoir to accompany the film. So those are our two pilot projects, and in the future, we hope to be able to sponsor other people's films and photo projects so that they can, you know, be able to solicit contributions, and then the contributors can get a tax deduction by running it through our nonprofit.
So that's your focus now, is really to write a book that accompanies the film?
Yes. You know, for the last year and a half, I've been traveling with the film. As you know, that's how we met. And now I need to, I've just signed with a publisher, North Atlantic Books, in the summer, and they would like to release the book next December 2014. So I've got my work cut out for me.
Well, great. That's exciting. No, it really, really, really is great. And I did enjoy the film, and I hope people come see it this Sunday at 12:30 p.m. at the Meta Center, New York.
I hope so,
it's 214 West 29th Street. So are you not doing your healing work anymore? What's happening with that?
You know, I still do. I do my healing work through, right now I'm consulting with a media company. Again, just helping everybody live their values through their work, but also creating media as medicine when we can. And I still work privately with a few clients, but because I've been traveling so much with the film, I kind of have this deal with Spirit that when I don't have enough bandwidth to do that work, then, you know, I kind of take a break from it. So I still love it, and I have... a lot of my clients are waiting for me to return to that work. But I think, you know, it's one of those things where doing the healing work is wonderful because it's one-on-one. But there was a part of me that also felt, in terms of creating media as medicine, that there was also a need to you know, work from the one-to-many. And through media, you know, writing a book, making a film, we're able to reach more people at one time, and that somehow seemed a bit more efficient.
I just wanted to ask you about some of the principal healers that you met. So you start the journey. Where's the first stop again? Because it's sort of
We started in Peru.
Oh, Peru. You go to Peru, mm-hmm. and then from there you go to Hawaii, right?
Yes.
And then you go back to your roots, your Vietnamese healing aunt. Was she your aunt?
Yes, exactly.
Then you go to India or Tibet. Is it Tibet?
First we go to Nepal.
Nepal,
And then we go to an area in India called Ladakh, which is northern India. And it's also known sometimes as Little Tibet because many people believe the Dak is a place that, you know, still has a very strong Tibetan cultural influence, and that probably what Tibet would have been had it not been taken over by the Chinese government. So it's a little pocket of what people might consider ancient Tibetan tradition. We also went to southwest China, the Yunnan area.
We did
go to Vietnam, back to my home country. I think I've named them all.
but the principal healers that you meet in these places, the kahuna in Hawaii, and the healer, your aunt. But these, did they have like a common, I mean, we talked about them being simple people. Was there anything else like in the feeling of who they were that was common to all of these great healers?
Yeah, I think it was that strong, not the concept of compassion, but actually the feeling of it, the energy of it, which, of course, it comes from the heart. So they were also very heartful, and I think that's something that was such a good example for me of how to live one's life, because some of their lives aren't easy. That's, for example, some of the healers in Nepal, they also have to be farmers. You know, they have to support their family. In other words, being a healer isn't their vocation. You know, it's an added responsibility to everything else they have to do to support their families. And
or that Chinese guy you met, he had a pretty intense life.
Yeah, and the Dongba that I met of the Nashi tribe in China, he had a very tough life, as you and I would describe it, and. However, again, such a great teacher for me in that, you know, no matter what his circumstances, being able to practice the traditions, the spiritual practices, was the most important thing to him. So as long as he could do that, he felt that life was great.
Right. He stayed in that same room was he living in that room for a while?
Well, he was living as part of an exhibit of his culture, and so his house was actually an exhibit, and he lived there. He actually wasn't allowed to leave there. And so at first I had a very hard time with this idea of having someone put on display and my participating in that. But then he set me straight, you know, and said, hey, at least I'm not in a, you know, I'm not in a camp anymore, a prison camp, which is what happened to him during the Cultural Revolution. And now I can share my traditions with others. And with you, one of the things he asked was, please record me, because I wasn't going to in feeling that I was kind of participating in something, you know, I didn't really believe in. But he asked us to please videotape his traditions and his ceremonies and take them to the outside world.
And he couldn't see. He was blind, was he? Is that the guy?
He was blind, yes. That's right. He was blind, but he had the gift of sight. So he could read into the past and the future.
And he had all this ancient wisdom as well. But all these great healers that you saw are very humble, but they have this compassion. And that sense of compassion in all of them, even your aunt, I mean, you know, you were closest with her, I guess. But they all have this universal compassion, which
yes.
Them,
yes.
Human, and the human quality, yes?
I think that's the point, that in a sense you don't have to be, you know, a recognized healer to be able to be healing to someone else, simply carrying compassion in your heart, in your action and in your words. That is actually a lot of it. And yes, they all had some certain special gifts, but all of it propelled by a desire to be of service to others. And
they also have a lineage, too. They also all have a lineage of history that they kind of were passing on, in a way, passing on to you in some ways, I think.
Yes, yeah, that's the other thing is, again, because many of them no longer had apprentices and their traditions were in danger of dying, they saw great value in being able to pass it on to me and, you know, into the film. And for a long time, Alan, I mistakenly felt everything they gave me was in the tapes. You know, we shot on video, so I was always very, you know, thinking the tapes were the treasure and always very protective of the tapes. And, you know, finally one day I realized that what they gave me was in me, and that's why I had to share it, not just in the film, but also as a practitioner.
Right. There was a sort of transmission, would you think, to you directly of their work?
Yeah. So, you know, for your audience and for you, I can say that the transmissions were put into the film, and for those who are open to receiving those, they're there, and for those who aren't, it's fine. I hope you enjoy the story. So it wasn't a prerequisite, but definitely it was the intention to capture their healing transmissions and be able to share them with many through the film. And as I said, through my healing practice, I could only, you know, affect one person at a time. But through the film and hopefully through the book, when it comes out next year, I'll be able to share those transmissions to a wider audience. And that's why I'm so grateful for people like you, Alan, who are including my film in your festival, because you're giving us a venue to share these ideas, to share these transmissions, and that's the most I can hope for. So thank you so much for including us.
Yeah, no, I felt it. I felt the transmission. I said, wow, people have to see this. I want to show this to whoever I can. So do you mind if I include that in the write-up, that there's healing transmissions in this?
Absolutely not. I mean, it's definitely something that I had, in a way, promised to the healers. So many of them had asked me, well, what are you going to do with what I give you? You know, what's your intention? And I said, well, it's to share. It's to share the healing transmissions, to share your gifts and your knowledge with others who otherwise wouldn't have access and would never know of you and what you have. And so that, you know, that seemed to give them a sense of wanting to share, because many of these things were private. And I was very surprised at how open people were with me and with my crew.
Well, I think it's so exciting and great that you really sought these people out and you captured the essence of their teaching, because the world is changing, and if people like you don't go out and document it, these incredible healing traditions that are still valuable for people will be lost and forgotten, and as if they'll just disappear through time. And so,
I think that was one of the things I used to have a lot of pain over, was the idea that there was loss here. And so we kind of had to zoom out and have a bigger spiritual look at it. And, you know, these teachers taught me that, well, you may not be able to stop it from disappearing as it is, but you can transform it into something that can still be used. And so, for example, one of the healers we saw in Peru, Don Pablo Amaringo, was a shaman and a painter. And, you know, he captured the transmissions of the rainforest spirits in his paintings. And so in many ways, what he was teaching me there was what I'm also trying to do with this film, that I was able, you know, capture something that may or may not be with us in physical form anymore, but transform it into a piece of media that can be used through space and time, or at least for a little bit of time, you know, when people see the film or they read the book.
Well, I think that is what makes good art, good media, is that when something is captured that transcends the medium, but it's like an invisible essence that's sort of downloaded to people, then you have real art, real power.
Yeah, I think it's a deeper dimension to just the visual or the aural aspect of any form of art, is when some of it sticks to your soul, you know? And sometimes you'll hear a song and you have no idea intellectually why it's moving you so deeply, but it's hitting your soul. And so, you know, again, that's my hope in creating media as medicine, is that I'm putting something out there that might be, that has layers to it. Maybe the top layer is that it's visually pleasing. The second layer may be that, oh, it's a pretty good story. And then the deeper layers are, there's something in there for your soul. There's something in there for, you know, healing your heart. And all I can do is put it out there, and people can receive and do with it what they, you know, what they choose.
Well, that's why I think your personal story is so important, because it's a deepening of the process to see you go through it and collapse, fall to the ground, and then arise as a transformed person. There's that essence that comes through there.
Yeah, I'm glad. I almost left that out of the film, so I'm glad that most people have reacted positively to it.
No, I think it's very key. But, I mean, thank you anyway for doing the film. Do people call you MR or Marie Rose?
Yes. People can call me Marie Rose or MR for short.
Well, thanks. Thanks, thing. I am going to show this movie Sunday at 12:30, and I will let everybody know about that. So, you have any final words?
I think if people see it, I'd love to hear their comments. We have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com Healing Planet Project. So I'd love any feedback that people have after viewing the film, or any questions they might have. I'm sorry that I can't be there with you. I'd love to do that, but I'll be there in spirit.
Well, you will be through the film for sure. So your website again, Healing, what is it, Healing?
Our website is talkingstorymovie.com.
Right.
And you can click onto our Facebook through that, or if you want to go straight to Facebook, it's facebook.com/healingplanetproject, which is my nonprofit. So two ways to kind of keep track of what we're up to. But Facebook at Healing Planet Project is a great way to share with others your experience of the film, and with me as well.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for everything. And
thank you too, Alan, and good luck with the festival. And I hope that you have a great turnout, and that people come to have their awareness awakened and their consciousness expanded.
Well, I think so. That's the point. Even, no matter who's there, though, something will happen. So thanks again. Be in touch, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful night.
Okay, thanks. This is Alan Stanfield for New Reality.